Welcome to the podcast, guys. You got Ian here. You got Kezzy here. And this is a special podcast because this is the first official podcast with the new official name.
Yes.
You want to go ahead and debut it? I'll let you go ahead and debut
it. Can I get a drum roll?
Okay, hold on.
Okay. That scared the shit out of me.
No, you're
good. I'm sorry. It's Real Heads.
Don't drop your laptop. I got it. We're good. We're chilling. Hey, welcome to the Real Heads podcast, guys, where your boy Ian and your boy Marquez are going to put our real heads together, right?
You know,
but also real. Our real heads. Got it. Got it.
Oh,
like movie real.
Yeah, movie real
heads together. But also, do we got a triple entendre in there? But also, we're going to reel.
Yeah, reel in the heads.
The head. Oh,
yeah.
Spin bars.
Yep.
Bars out of this world in the stratosphere. Welcome to the Real Heads podcast, guys. Where we're going to sit here and we're going to talk to you about a movie that we watched, right?
Yeah.
Movie that we watched?
We watched it a couple weeks ago.
We watched it. No.
Yeah.
We watched it like last week.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. We did.
It was a week ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's okay.
Man,
it's
time
fine.
Flies.
Time does fly. Time, and it didn't fly when we watched this movie.
No, it didn't. No.
So, I want to jump in this movie, right? Mm-hmm. I want to talk about this. There's a lot. Well, I feel like there's a lot to talk about.
What we watch? What we talk about?
We're talking about Borderlands. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that sound is.
I've never played the game. So.
Maybe that's no. Actually, no. There's a little guitar riffy guy.
Yeah.
In the game. Yeah, it's like that, sort of. We're talking about Borderlands, right? Mm-hmm. So the movie, live action video game movie, and we know how those go.
Mm-hmm.
Some are good, some are okay, a lot of them are pretty bad, but some are fun bad. And I think that's kind of like a lot of the conversation we have nowadays. Whenever you get a video game adaptation of a movie, people are always saying like, well, like, is it bad or is it fun bad? And I'm glad that people are getting to that point now of being like understanding that some movies don't have to be Citizen Kane. I feel like we say this all the time on the podcast.
No, I used to love watching super bad movies with my friends.
Yes.
It was so fun.
I have such a deep love for old early 2000s movies that aren't like very good, but like are maybe like. Because that's the thing. It's like I am trying to like move away from saying something like a movie is bad or good unless it's like definitively bad, you know, because like some movies are like very badly made or like have, you know, just like it's just not there's nothing about it that's redeemable. You know, some movies that are like that. But then there's also some movies that you may just not enjoy, you know, and I think that a lot of times people don't like to differentiate those two things.
Yeah.
And they want to just say something's bad because they're not enjoying it as much as somebody else. Mm. So I'm trying to like train myself to move away from that because some movies are just, you just might not enjoy it. You know, I don't enjoy Mamma Mia.
Really?
I don't think that it's bad, you know, but someone might say that. Someone might go, oh, that movie's trash. You know, well, maybe like you just don't like musicals. Yeah, exactly. It's like you thought it was fine, but you didn't love it. It's not your favorite movie.
No, not at all. But
some people don't know how to differentiate that.
Yeah.
They want to just jump in and just be like, it's trash. You're trash. Your mom's trash. Everything's trash. Why do you watch this? Your opinions are trash. That's a lot of people on the internet. Maybe that's just an internet thing.
It probably is.
It might.
I think it's just more broadcasted now that the internet's a thing. But
yeah,
it probably used to always be that way.
I don't know, man. I agree. I definitely agree. The internet's kind of going crazy. But I don't know. Do you want to jump in and or you want me to go through cast first, or how do you want to go?
Let's go through the cast. You know, I think in my notes I had stuff about the cast first.
This is an interesting.
It's a big beefy cast.
Yeah, it is definitely a big beefy cast.
What did you?
And not beefy in terms of like there's a lot of them, but more so just beefy in terms of
the name.
Yeah,
the juggernaut names.
They got some. They got some heavy hitters in this film.
Do you want to announce who they are first, or you want to tell me why you think that they were chosen?
Well, we'll say who they are first because that'll give us some more context. So you got Kate Blanchett as Lilith. Keep in mind, Kate Blanchett is hot off her heels. Is that how you say that saying? Hot off her heels?
I think so.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe if you tell us.
Let's go with that.
Wrong.
She's hot off her heels, coming off of now I'm forgetting the name of the movie.
She's in Tar.
Tar. Mm. Yeah. Like Oscar nomination, Oscar winner. Right? Did she win an Oscar for that?
What year was that again? Was that
the last previous one. Year? Yeah.
Who? Oh, gosh.
I don't think it was.
I think Poor Things won.
I think you're right. But she was nominated, and that's crazy. The switch up was crazy. Okay, but we're going to get to that. Mm-hmm. Kevin Hart as Roland, mm-hmm. right? Also crazy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what was the last big movie he did.
It's something with The Rock, I feel.
Probably something with The Rock. Probably something Netflix-y. Netflix. I'm feeling Netflix.
It was a Netflix film. Well, he definitely was in a recent Netflix
film. Lift. Yeah, The Lift.
But
was he like in a wheelchair or something?
I don't know.
He was helping Bryan Cranston in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So. That's what it was.
No, that's... Okay, yeah.
Yeah?
That's not what it is, but I think you're trying to make a joke.
No.
Oh, no, then that's not what that is. No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were trying to make a joke, which I was like, oh, okay. Well, I didn't expect you to say that. No, it's some
is
like.
Is that not the plot of the film?
No, he's working to get a heist done or something like that. Like he's like lifting up people who are stealing money or something.
I think we're talking about two different.
You definitely were talking about something completely different. That movie came out a long time ago. Did
it? Yeah. You might be right. Man, that shows you how many Kevin Hart movies I've watched recently. Okay, Jamie Lee Curtis
as also
Patricia Tannis.
Sorry.
Also what?
Also recent Oscar winner.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Everything Everywhere. Halloween.
But those were not that great. But
Hey, man.
Everything is great.
Hey, everything is great. You just didn't enjoy it.
No, I love Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, no. Sorry, I thought you were... I thought you were saying that... you didn't like the movie because you said the movie was bad and I was saying, no, it's great. And then you're saying everything is great. So I thought you were trying to say like every movie is great.
Oh,
because I'm calling back to how we shouldn't say that movies are bad.
Yeah, no. Everything Everywhere is great.
Yeah.
Halloween, the most recent trilogy is pretty bad.
That's crazy. See, I'm not saying that.
There were some fun, bad moments in it, but... they weren't my favorite.
I'm not saying that. All right, Jack Black as Claptrap, the voice of Claptrap. Claptrap is he's CGI, a
robot, little robot guy.
Yeah, so it's not actually him.
Just won a Nickelodeon Award, I believe. The Blimp.
What does that mean?
He won the Kids' Choice Award.
No, but like, what does that mean though?
I mean, the kids really enjoyed his performance as Bowser or something.
Oh, okay. Good job.
I mean, you know, like,
hey, congrats.
You got a little blimp.
That's great.
You never wanted a Nickelodeon blimp when you were younger? Like, if you were...
No, I think I was really weird, and I really, for some reason, wanted to get slimed. But now, and like, I think even they talked about it in, like, the Netflix doc, or the, not the Netflix doc. The
Max.
The HBO Max doc said that they just didn't enjoy getting slimed, and that just kind of threw the wind out of my sails there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. All right, we got Ariana Greenblatt as Tiny Tina. This is one thing I will add on here about Ariana, which I find really funny. A lot of people online when they're trying to like big up the cast and be like, yeah, and they were in this. They say Ariana and then they go, yeah, and she was young Gamora in Avengers Endgame, and I'm like,
yeah.
Can y'all shut up? You know, like not trying to take anything away from her as an actress, not at all, but like. Hello, she was in Barbie as like a main character, basically. Like the role she had in Endgame was so small, like it could have gone on uncredited. Like it was so small. Like she was in a she's done more.
Yeah,
because what I'm getting at, she's done more.
Did they cut her one thing or did they?
No, you're thinking of the actress from 13 Reasons Why who played older version of Tony Stark's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that got cut.
Okay.
Yeah. She was never technically in the film, but she filmed the scene. So there was that. Okay, so we got Ariana Greenblatt as Tiny Tina. And we've got Edgar Ramirez as Atlas.
He's the bad guy. We'll
get to that later.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's been in.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
Yeah,
and then we've got Florian Montienu. feel like I got that.
I think you did.
I think I did.
In my head, that's how
I'm not going to say it again.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. But we got him as Creed.
You call him Big M or just Creed.
Big M. FM. Yeah. I'm calling him FM.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's good.
We're sticking with it. So those are the key cast members. You got 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't think Ariana would be top billing. I can't say top billing, but that's in regards to the actual film. But there, you have 1, 2, 3, 4 A-list actors, right? Ariana's not an A-lister at this point, I would say.
No.
Maybe B.
She's known. Yeah,
B. Solid,
yeah,
B.
She's known.
I feel like you can't be in an Oscar-winning film as a lead and not be considered a B.
Yeah.
You know? She's got to get a couple more under her belt, and I think she'll easily get to A, but B right now. But yeah. Four A-listers. They are not cheap. And Oscar winners, like, they can ask for more. They can always ask for more. And I think it's very clear that a lot of this film's budget went to that.
Yeah.
A lot. It had to.
Yeah.
It just had to. So I want to go through. I made a nice little timeline here to kind of go through the production of this fantastic film we call Borderlands, the live action movie. And before we do that, we do still want to acknowledge that, you know, the movie was directed by Eli Roth, of Hostel fame.
Yeah.
Green Inglourious Inferno.
Bastards.
Acting role. Inglourious, yeah. Bastards. And also screenwriter Craig Mazin, ?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. We'll get into that. We'll get into that.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Craig Mazin, for the uninitiated, is also the writer behind Chernobyl, as well, yes, as The, yeah, Last of Us. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Big, big films are big shows. Yeah.
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 I would, right, say so.
So here's a little timeline for you. Let's take it all the way back to 2015. All right.
Oh, okay.
Lionsgate announces that they are developing a Borderlands movie with Avi and Ari Arad producing. Oren Uzel was one of the first writers involved, and this was the writer for Escape Room, Tournament of Champions, The Lost City, that Netflix movie with who was it? Was it Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock?
That's Netflix, but yes, that is who that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the new Mortal Kombat. Yeah.
Okay. The most recent Max, mm-hmm, one. Okay.
So early reports suggested Lee Whannell, who directed The Invisible Man, would direct, and Aaron Berg from G.I. Joe. Okay, so this guy has, this is the thing. Aaron Berg, I think, only had credits for movies that are upcoming. And one of them was G.I. Joe Ever Vigilant. Hasn't came out yet. So we don't know. We don't know the abilities of that.
Yeah.
And they were writing an R-rated script. That was what was announced first in 2015. 2016, the film officially entered development with various storylines and characters focusing focuses being considered. And it wasn't until years later that Roth and Mazin were brought on to helm the project. Right. Mm-hmm. So now we've got Roth and Mazin on here. It's, you know, it's been about a year or two that they're kind of cooking things up. 2020, pre-production began. So this film's been cooking since 2015. We're now 5 years from the announcement of the film.
Yeah.
To now we're starting to pre-production, not even shooting. We're just pre-production. And what happened in 2020, as we all know?
The pandemic.
COVID, the pandemic. Exactly. So as you can imagine, that was probably hard, right?
Yeah.
So 2020, pre-production began, and with the finalized script, and Roth as the director. Signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. Right? Okay. 2021. Did you like that?
Yeah, my brain took a second to like to readjust.
So 2021 is when the movie finally entered into production. And then with the cast joining, but it's obviously we're still deep into COVID at that point. Like they've got COVID-19 protocols up the wazoo. It was hard for anyone to film things during this point in time. Right? So I found out that apparently Eli Roth was encouraging a lot of the actors to kind of have this spontaneous energy on set, like just to try to capture, I guess, the spontaneity of the games and like the craziness of the games, which like fair, Yeah, the games do be crazy, do be doing some weird stuff, but it always felt like it was that way because of the writing. Not even that it felt that way. I mean, it was that way because of the writing. Like, anything that happened in that games, it wasn't like it was procedurally generated. You know, like it was written to happen that way. So I mean, but still, like, yeah, some of like the most famous comedy lines from comedy movies are usually improv. You know, so I get that, right? So then let's cut all the way to 2023, 2 years after 2021. So we're facing further complications with the development of the film, and they end up doing a 2-week reshoot in January. Mm-hmm. Now, this is 2015 to 2023. 8 years of film development, essentially, from idea to filming. That's a long time, right? So at 2023, they're doing 2 weeks of reshoots. Eli Roth can't be there. Why? Because he's filming Thanksgiving.
Oh,
right. Okay. This is a thing when it comes to Hollywood. You have these timelines of like when you sign on for projects, you can't you have to like get things done in a certain amount of time via obviously the studios or investors and the like. All these contracts and things get signed, right? So that's all like just like money, essentially, you know. But once that's over, and it's like also you're signing away like time, like you're saying like I'm available for this amount of time to do this thing. Mm-hmm. But then once that's over, like you're free. You know, yeah. You have no legal obligation.
Yeah.
So I don't think he had any legal obligation at that point. It had been mm-hmm. so long outside of production. But I think they probably were testing the film. And people were going, and then they said, all right, well, let's get him back in there. Well, how are you going to do that when you're missing your director, right? So they decided to get Tim Miller, the director of Deadpool, to step in.
That's, I felt there for a split second, I thought that he was the director at first.
Like, I know, a lot of confusion, a lot of it's here, it's there.
The original Deadpool, right?
Deadpool 1, right? So Tim Miller steps in. Not to necessarily reshoot the film, but they're doing... Yes, they were doing 2-week reshoots, but you can't reshoot an entire movie in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. especially a movie of this size. And what's Tim to do? You know, like someone has to be the director. Like someone has to be there to facilitate these reshoots in the set and whatnot. But... you know, the fact that it isn't the original director is going to show because the decisions are not going to be cohesive throughout.
Yeah.
Right. So we've got Tim Miller stepping in, and apparently the reshoots were so extensive that this movie that was originally slated to come out in 2021 had to be delayed for an entire year. So now here we are in 2024, where the film finally released August 2004. It was initially written for an R rating. And what was the rating we got in the end?
PG-13.
PG-13. Mm. With multiple hands in the pot. Switched directors twice. More than twice, technically, if you count before production, like actual filming began. Switched writers multiple times. It's, you know, it was a lot. So that's kind of like to paint the scene of like what you're walking into with a film like this. And I'll give it to you from there.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, I've seen a lot of chatter on Letterboxd actually about Eli Roth not being there for the reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've talked about this. I don't remember if we talked about this on this new podcast, definitely not on the old podcast, but a lot of people on Letterboxd with this film are saying that Eli Roth did not care that he just gave up. I know you just explained everything mm-hmm. to an extent of like, you know, the time is money, you know, not everybody has that. But do you feel like to an extent, like, I mean, he didn't show because like he was doing other things. Like, mm-hmm. do you think if he had the time to do it, do you think he would have just showed back up and did it? Or you think he, I mean, personally, we don't know Eli Roth, but I feel like Eli Roth takes pleasure in working and directing. So,
yeah, here's the thing. I think, you know, obviously I don't want to necessarily invalidate other people's feelings.
Yeah.
And their thoughts and their opinions. So I'm just going to give you my thoughts and my opinions. From what I've seen, obviously, I think that this man does enjoy directing. I think that he even enjoys acting. I think that to do what he does, to be a director, I think you gotta love it. You can't not love it. There's a, like, you're the quarterback, you know? You've got to pull strings and move heaven and earth to make things work. But at the end of the day, sometimes you do still have to answer to somebody else. That may be a producer. That may be a studio exec. And in this case, it's probably the head of Gearbox being Randy Pitchford. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, I don't know if you how up have you been on the Randy Pitchford drama online and how he's been essentially attacking any. I don't want to say attacking. He's been essentially verbally bouting with people online, mainly on Twitter, who have been giving the film any sort of negative criticism. He thinks the film is great. He really, really enjoys it. He doesn't understand why people don't like it.
Oh, I did hear about this.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm taking that knowledge. I'm taking my own knowledge of knowing how hard it is to direct and how much you need to really love that shit to step into that role. Because otherwise, if you don't love it, you might as well just do something else like that isn't as big of a responsibility in the film world that you might also love, but like isn't going to be as stressful, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you really love gaffing, like you can be the greatest gaffer there ever was, like, and probably be super fine and content with that. But if you really love this shit, like you really like direct, mm-hmm. you know? So, and I think that is Eli. Like I watched his movies like Hostel. I used to love Hostel as a kid. And, you know, the Green Inferno. You know, I know there's some people that don't really like the Green Inferno, but I enjoy it. You know, I look at those films and how those were directed. And I think about how that could have been translated into a Borderlands game, a Borderlands movie. Sorry. And I can see it. I can see, like, because, you know, fans of the Borderlands franchise know there's blood and gore everywhere. It gets messy. Mm-hmm. But it's cartoony, mm-hmm. you know, like it's cel shaded animation graphics. So it's obviously going to like as you know, you can make it super, super gory, but it's always going to have that element of like a little whimsical, you know, and it's never played up for a young audience. It never has been.
Yeah,
that's why it's always been rated M for mature. I think that he made a movie initially that he thought was going to be good for the fans of the franchise. I think him and his writer initially, that R-rated film, and, you know, nowadays, you know, we hate to hear about it, you know, the air cut and the Snyder cut, like, people get sick and tired of, like, you know, they always say, like, I want your cut initially. But the reality is that doesn't always happen because, like I said before, like, you can be the quarterback of the team, but you still may have, you know, a faculty member that puts the money into your sports team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You still have somebody that's funding this boat.
Yeah.
They may not be the one on boots on the ground, like really getting in there like you, but without their funds, you can't do what you're doing. So at the end of the day, you got to answer to them. And if they're not willing to sacrifice a bit of maybe what their vision is, what they're looking for, what market they're trying to dive into, then sorry, Charlie, like it's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened here, especially looking at how Randy has been acting online. I think it's very clear that he had a vision for a Borderlands movie and he really wanted it steered in that direction. And maybe initially he was like, oh, yeah, like we get Eli Roth in there who is known for blood and gore. And we'll have a great Borderlands film, but maybe somewhere along the lines, you realize, oh, maybe the fans aren't really going to receive this in the way I'm thinking they're going to. So maybe we need to open it up to a wider audience so we can get new fans.
Yeah.
That was where you fell. Because the thing is, with movies like these, you know, Borderlands is a big IP, but it's not Halo.
Right.
It's not the biggest IP in the world. You know, it's not Mario. You're not going to be able to just garner new fans, that even if you make a PG-13 movie, like we saw it, our theater was empty, as were most people.
There was more than there than I expected.
Yeah, but there was still not, like, we've seen some movies where it's packed.
Yeah.
You know? So it's one of those things where I'm just like, all right, I think you're better off in terms of your marketing of your film at this point, making a film that is really going to get your core fan base out into the theaters and let them market for you. Let that word of mouth spread. Let those reviews, because you know how like when movies come out and then the reviews come out and they're like, and like they do like post movie release trailers where it's like, critics are in, reviews are in, certified fresh. Like, you think we're getting that for Borderlands?
No.
No. But you could have.
Not a waste.
Exactly. You gotta first, obviously, write, direct, shoot, edit a great movie that people want to see, and then let them see it. And then that word of mouth will spread. Those people online, those Letterboxd reviews, those YouTube reviews, those podcast reviews are all going to spread that news and make people go out who are on the fence. You know, we gotta all, we get like as filmmakers, we gotta fight for people to come to the theaters nowadays. You have to.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot, I know a lot of studio execs, they think that the way forward is just IPs. We'll just keep rehashing every big IP because that's people are going to go see it because they already like it. Sometimes. But then you also have movies that are completely original stories that stand on their own that people are also going out to see. And with either in good marketing, good word of mouth, or a combination of both, i.e. long legs, you got a movie that does phenomenal.
Yeah.
Solid reviews. Good long stretch in the theaters. That's that. I don't know why I'm pointing at the camera. That's how I feel like you really write, shoot, edit, direct, release, and then market a good film. Trust in your team, trust in your directors, trust in your actors, trust in your editors, and then release it. Let your fans, your core fans, come enjoy something good. You know?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's interesting because this just felt like a very stereotypical Guardians of the Galaxy rehash. Mm-hmm. And we've been getting a decent amount of those, you know, where people take a ragtag group of people and are like, let's just make them a team.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that as even being a trope, because it's so many, like almost every horror movie has that trope, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's just packaged slightly differently, but that's where you get all of the different stereotyped characters and then they're all usually from different walks of life, and then they band together to try to band together, you know, at least and try to get not dead, you know? And like you see that in horror movies, we see that all the time in superhero movies, obviously, like it, you know, it's not even like something where you can really knock someone for doing.
Right.
But I feel like we do got to knock you when you're doing it so bad.
I just felt it was very blatantly obvious that.
Yeah.
It was trying to be Guardians. You know, it just was like, I don't know. I felt like it was so lifeless in that aspect. I'm just like, okay, well.
Yeah.
Like, because I've seen Dungeons and Dragons and I'm not I don't know much of the Dungeons and Dragons lore or whatnot. You know, never played, but I enjoyed it. You know, it was not like the greatest film ever, but it was a very good film.
Very entertaining.
Very entertaining. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know why you liked how they did their versions of get a ragtag group of team together to go do something? Because they made you care about individual characters.
Yeah.
Every character had a character arc. Every character had a hero's journey. You know, whether it was big or small, they each had something to gain, something to lose. There were stakes involved. This film didn't have that.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah. Before we get into the big, big review, I do want to kind of touch a little bit. Like, you played the games. Mm-hmm. I have never played the games. Mm-hmm. Was this adaptation justified at all? Like, did you feel like they did a decent job, or was it like, what did we get? like, did we get a, what's a comic book or a video game? Did we get a Last of Us or did we get like Mario from the 90s? You know,
and I wouldn't even say that. I would say that there's definitely tiers below Mario from the 90s, because I feel like Mario from the 90s is one of those bad, good films. I feel like it's like I remember watching that as a kid and thinking this is great. But I also didn't play a lot of Mario when I was a kid. Like, yeah, I played a little bit of 64 and a little bit of Sunshine, but they were never games that I owned. It was always playing them at a friend's house, you know? So, like, I wasn't, like, super into the IP. So I thought that movie was great. And then it was only when I got older that people were like, what are you talking about? This is trash. So I feel like that's one of those ones where it's like a bad, good film. This film is not a bad, good film. And I don't, when you say justified, do you mean like does it need to exist? Is that what you mean?
No, like I'm more so justifying like how good of an adaptation is it? Like,
oh, what bad. Is
very bad.
So bad.
Whose performance did you like the most? Like, who do you feel like performance was like pretty good adaptation wise?
Ariana.
Ariana?
Yeah. Yeah, I would go to hers first because it's a vocal and a physical performance, and then after that I would go to Jack Black because it's just a vocal performance. But he did pretty good as Claptrap, I won't lie. Voice wise, I mean, Claptrap is always kind of like the like weird, annoying joke cracking robot guy, you know? Like, yeah, he did that well. Ariana, I feel like, pretty much hit Tiny Tina on the head. I think they could have obviously given her more to do and given her more crazy lines and just more in general. Just give me more. And maybe it would have like stuck out even more. But yeah, I think those two pretty solid.
Okay. How did you feel Kevin and Kate and Jamie will throw her into?
A lot of people keep saying that they think that Kate was sleepwalking through her performance. I don't like saying things like that. And because I feel like, you know, you really don't know. And I think that unless it's a situation where it's like one of those movies that gets filmed and then you hear about in the press run that the actor did not want to be there. Like, they tell you, like, and, you know, they're like doing interviews and they're like saying like, yeah, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like you hear about some drama going on. I think that's the only time that you should really be like, yeah, someone's sleepwalking through their performance, because like, I don't think that she is. I think she's just not given a lot. And it could also, here's the thing too, because like you're going to tell me that an Academy Award winning actor, or maybe nominated, I'm not sure if she's actually won an award. Maybe she has. I think she has
in the past.
I'm sure she has. She's phenomenal. I'm sure she has. She has to. But an Academy nominated, Academy Award winning actor is going to sleepwalk through a role.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like they take their stuff seriously. And I'm sure she took that seriously, too. But at the end of the day, if the writing and the director is telling you to act this way, you're giving them what they want. You know, there could have been 20,000 takes and 19,999 of them could have been like crazy, amazing, good. But if the director and the editor chose that one take that they felt like that more matched the vibe of what they were going for, there you go. That's it. So, you know, I struggle to agree and say that, like, she sleepwalked through her performance. But I do feel like what the performance that was given, not just, I won't even say that. I won't say the performance because it's not, I'm not putting that on her. I would say the way that they wrote her character to be isn't how Lilith acts. And I'll also go as far to say she's honestly miscast. You know, it's definitely an issue of being miscast. The character of Lilith could easily be an older 20s or a mid 30s, not really a late 30s, and definitely not 40s or 50s plus.
Yeah.
Same for Tannis. Same for Roland. Miscast.
Yeah.
Very miscast.
Yeah, I don't know. From watching them, I think there's bits and pieces there where they, like, seem to, like, shine. You know what I mean? Like, they each have their moments. But I just feel like, I don't know, it just, maybe it was the way that they edited the film or cut the film or whatnot, and just the way that they went with the film, it just felt, like I said earlier, just kind of like soulless or lifeless to an extent.
Yeah.
If you want, we can just jump right into the more of the spoiler type of reviews deeper in.
Yeah, we definitely can. Yeah, let's get into it.
So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you want to, stop what you're doing now. Put us on hold. Put us on pause. Whatever you need to do. Clap on, clap off. And go see the movie. We still encourage you to see the movie.
Always see the movie.
If you haven't. If you aren't, then, you know, what are you doing? Why are you listening to us? But I know a lot of people like to listen about the movie before.
Right.
They go, I don't get those people. But I understand that they do that.
They do that.
But yeah, so we're going to get into spoilers right now. And if we have enough editing skills, transition. Anyways, so we get an opening shot. They're in space. They're like hovering the Borderlands planet, which I don't remember what it's called. And we get this opening with Kevin Hart. And we introduced Tiny Tina and whatnot. I'm not going to lie. When we got after Kevin Hart gets through kind of saying he's going to save Tiny Tina, and then they break out Krieg.
Yeah.
I thought.
No, Krieg broke himself out.
Oh, yes. Krieg broke himself out. I'm sorry.
Krieg just literally broke himself out.
I thought that one. I thought that he was going to be like an adversary. Like, I thought he was like maybe going to be like, you know, because if we're going with Guardians, which that's what this film is trying to be to an extent, you know, Drax isn't really like a good guy in the beginning. Like, he's kind of like a slight adversary to be like, oh, like, you know, Gamora pissed me off. You know, she's related to Thanos. You know, I hate her. I want to kill her.
Right.
You know, so I thought that was what was going to happen. I thought that, you know, we were going to get that. We might get Kevin Hart, who's trying to be Star-Lord, I feel like he's trying to be Star-Lord to an extent, but I also then feel like Cate Blanchett is also trying to be Star-Lord regardless.
Yeah.
He just, like, they're just like, oh, let's do it. Let's save Tiny Tina. I wasn't prepared for that. I was like thinking that we were going to get like maybe Kevin Hart's first shine of like, he's not just some goofy man. Like he's capable of, you know, doing things, and he's capable. And I just felt
like as an actor,
not as an actor, but as his character, like,
oh, like Roland.
Roland as Kevin Hart, who's playing Roland.
Gotcha.
I felt like we were going to get this heroic moment with him. And I felt like we didn't get that to an extent from what I remember. But
yeah, well, the hallway scene, he threw the explodey
in the first scene
doll. Was that the first scene? No, the hallway scene
towards the middle. Yeah, we'll get there. But I don't know.
Are you just saying just in this
scene? Just in this scene, the opening sequence. I was expecting to see him heroic, you know, in some like.
I guess you're right. It was just kind of like, we got to find this girl. And then they found the girl, and then they kind of just hard cut it out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was weird. I will say, because I think I mentioned this to you when we came out of the film, that like the two things that made me upset about that opening sequence was, one, how are you going to have Krieg bust himself out? If Krieg could have busted himself out, then Krieg could have busted himself out and busted Tiny Tina out forever ago. If they's be besties, don't do that. That was very silly. The other thing was that I'm not a fan of cold opens unless you're doing it for a purpose. Like it has to serve the film. That didn't really serve the film. And like, yes, you could say, well, how else would we get Tina out of there? Well, what I would tell you is to take that part out of the film, take that whole sequence out of the film, and have the movie start in a place where Krieg and Tina are already on Pandora. Maybe, Roland is also on Pandora with Tina doing whatever, or he's doing something else, and you can have Roland and Lilith join together in some way to find Tina. But I didn't like that. Because a lot of times when you do cold opens, it's a start and a stop, right? We got to build momentum. We got to get that rising action to the climax and then come back down. And then you just repeat that cycle over and over again throughout the course of the movie. But like that open didn't really have much of that at all. It was just kind of like, all right, we jumped in there. We're shooting things and we're trying to find the girl. And then it just cut. And then it goes right back to zero. And if that initial bang isn't like really banging, then you're going to feel like you went like and then just coasted and then went. So like you're just, you know, like the energy is just bad now. Like it's not high. You're now 20 minutes into your film and you're like, all right, well, what's next? You know, like that's what happens when you do stuff like that. Like you really went whoop, whoop, whoop. Mm-hmm. We're still at zero. So that's what I didn't enjoy about the opening.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a little more technical. Mine was just like, oh, he's not a hero. You know, but and then we get next? We get introduced to Kate.
Yeah.
You know, and there's
and again, it's cool. Almost like we're doing another cold open with her.
Yeah.
You know, we're starting off and it's like, well, we got to show her being a badass and she's in a bar and she's got to rough up some guys. Yeah. Look at Lily.
Woo. And there was like some cool, like science fiction aspect stuff with like, you know, the guy wearing the weird face thing that like shows him having somebody's face, but it's not his face. You know?
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. You know, I'm a sci-fi nerd. So I was like, okay, that's kind
of
interesting.
I would do without all of that. Take all that away. I
mean, it wasn't
because needed. There wasn't, and like this movie, and if that is a movie adaptation of a video game that is known for being the game about a million guns, and we had like two different guns in this. So if we can maybe focus less on weird, cool face holograms shit, we can get some cool ass guns. That's what I wanted. That's what I feel like a lot of the fans
want. I feel like there wasn't a lot of guns in that.
You know how many legendary guns there are in Borderlands that have really random legendary effects that could have been utilized in this movie? That's the fans. Like the fan service is like easily there and available for you when you're doing a video game adaptation. It's so easy because you don't have to really try hard or work for it. And yeah, some people are going to just go, oh, it's just the fan service. This is all you can move against about the fan service. Yeah,
but that's
sure. But that's what we're here for, right? Yeah. Did we come here for Citizen Kane in our Borderlands film? No, we came here for guns, violence, gore, and really goofy dialogue. That's it's funny because it's like it looks childlike, but it's very vulgar and crass. That's why that's Borderlands humor.
Yeah, it's like Conker's Bad Fur Day. I don't know if you know who Conker is.
Nope.
It's an N64 game but it's like he's like a cartoon squirrel, but he's like really raunchy. You know, he's like
cussing that's it. That's it right there. But don't do what happened here. I don't know what that opening was with Kate. I can't say Kate with Lilith. I don't know what that was. It felt also like you could have taken that out. Take that beginning part out. Take that in that second beginning part out. Because you cold opened twice. You started and stopped twice now. And now we're 30 minutes into the movie. Start on Pandora. Just start her on Pandora. Because we do another cut. And now all of a sudden she's on Pandora. And they've got the voiceover going. All right. I mean, you're doing voiceover. Most of the time, if you're doing voiceover in a film, you're using it at the beginning or the end or both, or you have one of those special movies where your protagonist is kind of helping narrate throughout to kind of give the audience more of a leeway into what's going on in their mindset and our mind state and just help them along the film. This movie wasn't like that though, which was annoying, was that you didn't have Lilith talking throughout the movie. You only had her doing it more so in the beginning. And I think maybe at the end, I think so.
Take a little bit.
Yeah. And it just, It didn't feel needed, especially when this wasn't like a character piece. You know how some films are like they're about a specific character mainly, and everyone else's story kind of revolves around them, as, except for the other way around. Sometimes it can be the other way around. And those movies are definitely a little interesting, too, when it's supposed to be a character piece. But this was neither. This was, like you said, was kind of packaged a bit like a Guardians film, but with a Borderlands lens. But you had two cold opens and a narrator who wasn't narrating for the first cold open, who narrates the second cold open. You know, it's like just some choices that aren't really making a lot of sense.
Yeah. And then the film kind of just exists, in my opinion, I feel. Like, she shows up on Pandora and she gets kind of where she needs to go. And then, like, nothing really exciting happens, really, until, like, they get to the bus, you know, section. And even then, that's kind of like a little meh to me. Like, I don't know. Like, it was kind of like, oh, shit. Like,
Tiny Tina, just trudging along. Yeah,
Tiny Tina got bombed. Teddy bears, you know, that's kind of funny. And she really doesn't want to go back with her dad or go back to her dad or whatever. And it really doesn't feel like I just feel like I don't get invested again.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't feel like I get invested again at all until like the ending of the film.
I feel like I never got invested. I'll be real.
That's fair. I do want to talk about the sequence where it's pretty far in where they go. They're in the extra, you know, what is Creed's people called? Like the people
psychos.
Psychos. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're like in the extra bad psychos area.
Yeah.
They go into the acid, like, tunnel and sewer thing.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that sequence was bad. Like,
yeah,
I wasn't thrilled about it. I was like, okay. And then, you know, this is where we get Kevin Hart, aka Roland's big heroic moment.
But he's like, you go, I'll stay. Yeah. I'll fend them off.
I got thrown off though, because him and Creed are going out there and they're kicking ass, but they shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like a million other psycho people still running up on them. And then they just show up. Do you remember that?
No.
They just show up behind the gate. And I'm like, where did they come from? And that I was like, maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
Some weird editing there.
Yeah, maybe I'm remembering it wrong. But I don't remember that, but that
sounds about right.
Yeah, I just am like, how'd they show up? How'd they get behind this? Like, I just was like, this is not like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was like, this is not a cool sequence. Like, you know, it's not, if we were referencing Guardians still, like Guardians 3 does a cool tunnel sequence. You know, they're in like a hallway.
Yeah.
It's a hallway sequence, you know.
Yeah, but like that's different too, because I feel like a sequence like that was a big payoff for a lot of things happening like that. Like you don't always get to just have action happen sometimes, you know, sometimes you got to work up to it. And that sequence was a big like working up to it. Like, obviously, you know, they're towards the later half of them of that movie. And you had, you know, like it, like where all the characters were and their character arc at that point, like it all just converged into this moment of, all right, now we got to like really team up, suit up and kick ass. You know, we didn't have, like we mentioned earlier, we didn't have any of that in this film. There was no hero's journey. There was no, we're going to start the characters here. And by the time we get to this hallway scene, we're going to really care whether or not Roland lives or dies. There wasn't that. There were no stakes. You never felt like any character was really in peril.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't like the, if still referencing Guardians, the asshole standing in a circle, you know, reference or scene where, you know, they're deciding to save Xandar or not. You know, we don't get that. I mean, we kind of do when they meet up with Jamie Lee, but like, I don't know. It just seems so pointless.
Yeah.
Like,
it is pointless. It's pointless because they were never given a hero's journey. That's why. That's that. I deduced this like like pretty soon after we left the theater, I was just like really thinking about it. And I was like, what is just like the main reason this is just not working? Like, I'm sure you can pick this movie apart, but it's because no one has a real hero's journey. Like, you can't just say, okay, here's the story. We got to get the, like, it hurts my head to even think about. We got to get this girl who is supposedly the key to opening the vault, and we got to keep her away from her dad, and she's the key to the vault. But okay, so why are you here? Well, I'm here because I need money. Why do you need money? What is that money really going to do for you? What is that? You know, like, we knew why Star-Lord was a thief, because his life trajectory led him to the path of thievery, where he was raised by thieves and taught him that thievery was valuable and something that was a good show of, you know, your worth, you know? So that made sense. And they did that in one movie. They showed you why he was on his path, why he was on his hero's journey. We were shown why Gamora was on her hero's journey and what was at stake for her. Same thing with Drax, same thing with Groot, same thing with Rocket. We don't know really why anyone's doing anything outside of, we're all just here to open the vault, I guess, before Atlas does. Sure. That's really it. And if we all have the same hero's journey, then we effectively have no hero's journey. We can't all, like, and it's not even like the sense of like, because like, okay, I could see someone maybe wanting to argue with like, well, look at Lord of the Rings, you know, technically everyone has the same heroes, but that's not necessarily true. Like, yes, everyone has the same goal. But when you think of a hero's journey, right, you got to think about what you as a character, what your wants, needs and desires actually are, because it's always going to be different than someone else. You know, like, you and I may both want to have a really great podcast, but you and I both may have a different want in terms of that. And we might need something different in terms of that for each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, that's where I say like, yeah, it's like these characters all have the same goal, but they did not have hero's journey at all. None of them did. And that made this movie fail.
Yeah.
A lot. Like, it was, it's sad because it's like the writing was there, like not in the movie, but like in terms of the video game, the way that the video game is structured, it's pretty simple. You're a vault hunter. You're a character. You create the character, not say create the character, but you pick a vault hunter, and they're every game a new set of like four different characters. They have their own little powers, whatever. And you're tasked with basically just kind of like going and figuring out how to get into like the vault, you know, in each game kind of. Well, I haven't played one, so I don't know if there's a vault in one. I would assume so. But there's a vault in two. And is there technically a vault in three? I think there's a vault. I think, is that a vault? But the thing is like, you're a vault hunter, right? Vault hunters hunt vaults. They want loot. They want treasure, guns, money. Mainly guns. You want guns. Guns are cool, right? We like guns. So you go around to different characters in the Borderlands universe, and they're kind of pushing your story along. Like, you go meet up with Scooter and his mom, and they're like telling you like, hey, like, you know, we got this like gig for you. Like, we'll help you get some wheels. You need some wheels. You need to be able to traverse Pandora. Well, come help us do this thing real quick. And I got you. Now you got a four wheeler. Now you got a Forerunner. Now you can take that Forerunner and drive on down the, you know, this other area in Pandora and meet up with Dr. Zed. Dr. Zed, he's going to get you a nice shield, you know, do a little mission for him. He's going to get you a nice shield. So now you can take more bullets, right? Now I'm going to go find Marcus. Marcus is going to set you up with a nice good gun, start you off. you know, teach you about different types of ammo, corrosive, slag, electric, stuff like that. And it just keeps on going and amping up. And then you have like factions. You've got the psychos and they're just psychos and they do crazy things. They have no real aims. You have Crimson Raiders who are like the militant group, Atlas, another militant group, you know, and they all have their own like morals and things that they're doing, and you get involved with them in different capacities, but it pushes the narrative forward that leads you to this point at the end. You know, there's always going to be a big bad, a villain who is ultimately just trying to get their own vault and take over the world or whatever the heck they're trying to do, you know? So they're always opposing you, but like the structure is there. The games put the structure there for you, how you can make a movie like this. You just got to really nail down your look, your vibe, your casting, writing a cohesive story that makes sense and like knock it out of the park. I want to do a quick shout out to One Piece and the team behind that. Everyone who works on that, every actor, director, writer, gaffer, lighting guy, like everybody who works on that does a fantastic, phenomenal job, and it shows on the screen. You know, it's a great adaptation. I haven't even seen that many One Piece episodes, but from what I have seen, it feels like a great adaptation. You know, it feels like at the very least something that is entertaining and enjoyable to watch. And like, I like how like in the show, they do the wanted posters. In the TV show, the live action and the anime, they do the wanted posters. You have something similar like that in the games of Borderlands. Every time you meet a new character, they would always kind of slow the screen down and do kind of like a almost like a little title card, be like, Ian Drennan likes puppies. Like, and now you know who that person is. Like, it's a nice, fun little nod. They don't do that in the movie. So it's like stuff like that. It's like, why take that out? Why you're taking away the DNA of what the game is. What the fans are going to be looking for. So yeah, I know I talked at length there, but
you're fine.
Yeah.
I know we probably wrapping up here soon before we'll get into final thoughts and then game or special game, not the game, but whatever you got cooked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you did want to talk about Alice as a villain in this movie.
Yeah.
For brief, whatever much time we got.
Yeah. I just wanted to say about Alice that I didn't like the character because I felt like it should have been Handsome Jack. Handsome Jack is like the definitive Borderlands villain.
Okay.
Every fan loves Handsome Jack. If you wanted to really get the fans in seats, that seemed like a no-brainer. Like a no-brainer. And like also, who is Atlas? Atlas is a company, not a person. You know?
Yeah, they made him like Jeff Bezos type character.
Very like, silly. Very weird. Like, name him, please. He can still work for Atlas, but he can also have a name. And that's all I'll say about that. Just
I didn't like him. I didn't like the villain. I thought his villain was really weak.
Bland.
Super bland. Super like, you know, you got a bag of Lay's original, or you got a bag of barbecue Grippos, which if you're Ohioan, you know. At least Columbus, at least you should know.
Yeah.
But we always going to go with the Grippos, and that man ain't no Grippos.
No Grippo.
Yeah.
Ain't got no flavor, no seasoning. No sazon, as they would say. Good.
It was, his villain was so bad.
It's bad.
Like people will try to argue about Marvel villains, about how one dimensional they are. And I just was like, at least they got something. You know what I mean? Like this guy felt like he was a zero. You know what I mean? Like, besides he had money, you know, but anyway, any final thoughts on the film before you give your rating?
I want us to do better. I hate to sound like the disappointed dad, but that's how I feel. Like I
you better
like just come on, man. Like, let's just let's just cut the crap. And if there is a next time, let's get it right next time. I don't care if that means beat for beat, you recreate Borderlands 2, the movie. I don't care. Let's just get it right next time.
Maybe we do a TV show instead.
No.
No, it has to be a movie.
Has to be a movie.
Okay. I don't think they are going to.
I also don't think they're going to. But who knows? If Borderlands 4 sells like a bazillion copies, then maybe they'll.
Yeah.
Because you can throw away money at that point. If you got it. I don't think they got it now. They got to recoup costs with that.
It was a $15 million project and they didn't even make a million or something like that.
That was maybe like four. I don't know. Something like that. They didn't make a lot.
No, not at all. Yeah. Final thoughts for me. It's not very great. Doesn't really have a very good story. Characters are kind of just not annoying, but just there.
Yeah.
It's just, and that's what makes it annoying is that they just are there.
They're just there. So.
What's your final grade?
I want to try to do a thing now. I want to try to do a thing because I feel like we have this unique opportunity because we just started a new pod, right? Real Heads pod. Catch us on anywhere. I'm gonna create a rating based off of the movie itself, like based off of like what's going on in the movie. I'm gonna say this. You'll get what I mean when I say
okay.
it. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna rate this movie. Claptrap pooping out bullets. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So you take that what you will. What you feel like that rating means, then that's what it means to you.
Yeah. I
know what it means to me.
I agree it's that.
You agree it's that?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I maybe even Kevin Hart in the tunnel and then just appears behind a gate.
yeah I feel you on that. I gotta see that scene again.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but
you might have been. I don't know,
like that was literally a distinctive moment where I'm like, all right, like, they're going to beat up people, but how are they going to get back? And then they just show up. I'm like, oh,
that's how.
Okay,
that's exactly how
they just show up.
The power of editing.
Went through a wall.
Have you ever heard of a splice tool?
Yes.
Yeah does wonders.
All right. Well, we're going to take a small break. And from there, we're going to play a game, which I think is.
We got to end it.
We got to end it.
Yeah, we got to end it. End it.
Oh,
yeah. We'll end it and restart with the game.
Oh, OK.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I am confused now. So don't if you want to close it.
No, it's OK. I'll close out. Hey, yo. Thank you, guys. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for tuning in. Some of you guys will catch on Patreon. Some of you guys, we possibly may not, but, come hang in the Patreon. We got vibes down there and there's no clap traps. Absolutely none.
Nope.
None. Banned.
Not that I know of.
Banned. If your name is Clap Trap and you want to subscribe to Patreon, banned.
Dang.
Actually, no, you can subscribe.
Yeah. I was going to say, you don't want to.
No, you can subscribe.
That far.
No, that's okay. Thank you guys. Have a great week. We'll see you again next time.
We'll see you later.